You are listening to local and regional news on KMUN 91.9 FM. I'm Skylar Butenchin. New job listings suggest U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement is planning a new detention facility on the Oregon coast. As Dirk Vanderhart reports, it would be the agency's only such facility in the state.
Suspicion has been mounting since last week that ICE has big plans at the Newport Municipal Airport on the Central Coast. New want ads provide the strongest evidence yet. A Texas-based contractor with a long history of staffing ICE detention facilities recently posted detention officer positions in Newport. Those ads make clear applicants would be supervising ICE detainees. Another contractor is looking for medical professionals, such as nurses in Newport. Those ads list experience with ICE as a plus. Local, state, and federal officials say they've been stonewalled when they ask ICE about its plans on the coast. The agency did not directly speak to Newport in response to OPB, but said the Department of Homeland Security is working at, quote, turbo speed to stand up new detention facilities around the country. I'm Dirk Vanderhart reporting.
You're listening to KMUN. I'm Katie Frankowitz. OPB reported that at a community meeting in Newport last night, Newport City officials said Team Housing Solutions, the federal contractor that had reached out about leasing the property at the airport, had rescinded their letter of intent. But concerns remain. Oregon lawmakers say they are being stonewalled when they ask questions about the potential facility in Newport. KMUN's Skylar Butenchin has more.
U.S. Senators Ron Wyden and Jeff Merkley, along with U.S. Representatives Suzanne Bonamici and Val Hoyle, said on Wednesday they also have concerns about the decision to relocate a Coast Guard helicopter away from Newport. In a letter to Department of Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem, the lawmakers said reassigning Coast Guard assets or establishing ICE facilities in Newport would be, quote, deeply misguided and should not move forward without full transparency and consultation with local officials, end quote. The lawmakers requested a briefing from Noem as soon as possible. In Newport, many of those in the fishing industry felt blindsided this week when they heard about the relocation of a Coast Guard helicopter. The move appears to be connected to plans for a possible Immigration and Customs Enforcement facility in the coastal city. The news came shortly before the annual Dungeness crab season, which is the most valuable fishery on the Oregon coast. Many in Newport expressed dismay that the helicopter will be based in North Bend, meaning it will take longer to reach vessels in distress off the Newport coast. Because of the value of Dungeness crab, fishers will be going out regardless, says Tony Bixler, the president and CEO of the restaurant Local Ocean Seafoods.
There's not really an option to not go out and get that crab. To me, that's very concerning that there was no community input in that decision. It's kind of an afterthought to this story, but really it's a big deal on its own.
During a Wednesday evening meeting of Newport City Council, city leaders said it's unclear whether the helicopter relocation is temporary or permanent. Newport's mayor and council members expressed opposition to the potential ICE facility and vowed to fight it.
In Clatsop County, commissioners have said they received multiple phone calls about ICE enforcement actions over the weekend. At least six people were reportedly detained by ICE agents in the Seaside area. Clatsop County Sheriff Matt Phillips says he and other Oregon sheriffs have growing concerns about the impact of ICE operations in the state and the communities they serve. In particular, they point to multiple situations where federal agents are not wearing any identifiable badges or uniforms when making arrests or pursuing suspects. Phillips says this has led to confusion. In some instances, people have called 911 reporting kidnappings at gunpoint. Local police and sheriff's office deputies who respond are equally in the dark since ICE hasn't even told them they are in the area. At a Clatsop County Board of Commissioners meeting on Wednesday, Phillips told commissioners he and other Oregon sheriffs met with ICE officials this week.
And we laid out several instances that brought significant concern, and basically they didn't blink. They were maybe indifferent to what our concerns were.
Phillips told commissioners that the attitude of ICE agents in the field undermines their credibility and legitimacy, but also that of local law enforcement. The Astoria Parks and Recreation Department oversees more than 300 acres of parkland, an aquatic center, and other amenities important to the Astoria community. In 2016, the department put out its first ever master plan, a document meant to guide the department for the next 10 years. Departments and organizations of all types make strategic plans and master plans, but this one was a snapshot of a department at a critical point. At the time, city leaders were trying to figure out how and at what level to sustain the department. Now, Astoria Parks and Recreation is looking for community input on its next 10-year master plan. On Saturday, the city will kick off this public process with an open house from 12 to 2 p.m. at the Astoria Armory. I spoke with Jonah Dart McLean, director of Astoria Parks and Recreation, about the plan, the department, and what comes next. Our conversation has been edited for length. So maybe just to set the stage, tell us, why have a master plan?
There's a lot of different reasons. It helps make sure that what the department is focused on aligns with what the community is looking for as far as a Parks and Recreation department. Parks and Recreation doesn't have a clear definition. Every community does it differently. And so getting that definition from the people that we serve is really important. And then it also helps highlight specific recommendations and action items that we can pursue either through regular operations or look to grant opportunities. And having those spelled out specifically in the master plan helps us achieve those goals a lot better.
What did the previous, or I guess the current master plan, really set the stage for? What are some of the things that came out of it?
A big achievement of the master plan was highlighting the need to have sustainable staffing for the department's operations. And so as a result of that, our department's grown, nearly doubled in size since the plan was incepted to now. We've got about 14 full-time employees, and at the time we had 6 or 7. So really made a huge increase with that. It's really helped us improve outcomes and operations. And then also there was a lot of recommendations for capital improvements, such as riverwalk lighting and better signage and wayfinding information along the riverwalk, as well as improving playgrounds like at Lindstrom Park too. So we were able to leverage grant funds basing that off of master plan recommendations.
One thing the Parks Department has put out for this next master plan process is an expansion of the existing aquatic rec center. Could you talk a little bit more about what else might be in the upcoming master plan?
Well, I wouldn't say we're pushing for anything, but we are certainly wanting to lay out those ideas for the community to then push us, or at least verify or confirm what's important. So like you mentioned, consolidating operations at the Aquatic Center was a recommendation in our 2016 plan. And so we've taken steps to say, what would that look like? And we'll have that as an item for the public to consider, to say if they support that or not. And then dog parks, we know, are a big item that's continually come up as far as people wanting to have those resources or at least have advocacy for it. Improving our public playgrounds, and then what we can do to best offer recreational programs. We've really had a lot of shifts in what we do recreationally for the community as far as youth sports and then community events and also adult sports. So we want to make sure we're getting the right feedback on those things.
What are some of the challenges or constraints the Astoria Parks Department faces when it comes to possibly moving forward on some of these community requests or interests?
Well, for one thing, we're not a new department. We've been around for a long time. The city's been around for a long time. And because of that, we have a lot of residual infrastructure. There's a lot of parks in Astoria, which is unique for a community of our size. We've got pretty unique assets as well, like the Column, or the Aquatic Center that we're in right now, large parks like Tapiola Park, and then a lot of different landscaped and maintained areas across the city, as well as Ocean View Cemetery. So just a really diverse set of assets that we're maintaining, where if you were starting a parks department from scratch today in Astoria, chances are you'd probably want to scale the amount of amenities that we would offer. Having all these things already in place kind of changes how we can array our resources. We're obviously not going to disregard the things we have, and we need to make sure that they're working properly and serving the community. An item that comes up a lot, for instance, is our aquatic center. It's a very large center for a community of our size, and people are often asking us to expand the hours or to make it more accessible for people. And the challenge we run into is that it requires a lot of lifeguards to staff. We need both full-time and part-time lifeguards. And it's not as simple as just saying, we'll just hire more lifeguards. We've got funds in place to do that. We just don't have the needed amount of applicants and qualified people that will work the hours we need them to work.
That was Jonah Dart McLean, director of Astoria Parks and Recreation, talking about the upcoming master plan process for the department. This fall and winter, Parks and Rec will be working with its consultant to collect data and feedback and community input through open houses and online surveys. The master plan process for the Parks and Rec Department is expected to wrap up late next spring. You're listening to KMUN.
Last week, the city of Seaside broke ground on the Pacifica Apartments, a new affordable housing project. The two-acre development will bring 69 units of income-restricted housing to the Seaside community. The city received the property from Clatsop County back in 2022. Construction is expected to take roughly 17 months, with an estimated completion date of April 2027. All units of the Pacifica Apartments will have rents set at 60% of the area median income. Seaside City Manager Spencer Kyle says demand is expected to exceed the number of available units. He says priority will be given to applicants who currently live or work in Seaside, or who previously lived in the community and had to move due to housing costs. Kyle says even aside from the affordability aspect, having 69 more units available in Seaside will take some of the pressure off the housing market in general. This story comes to us through a news partnership with The Astorian, online at dailyastorian.com. Last week, the Tillamook City Council approved an agreement with Business Oregon that puts the city on track for a $7.2 million loan to support the replacement of a main water transmission line. The project will see the city's water supply line relocated from underneath the runway at the Tillamook Airport and upgraded for seismic resiliency. Funding for the remainder of the $20 million project is coming primarily from the American Rescue Plan Act of 2021. Tillamook City Manager Sean Lewis says the loan from Business Oregon will be repaid by the city over the course of 30 years using funds generated by a water rate increase. That increase was approved by the City Council earlier this summer. This story comes to us through a news partnership with the Tillamook Headlight Herald, online at tillamookheadlightherald.com.
I'm Sylvia Thorpe. You're listening to KMUN. The Center for Biological Diversity has filed a petition with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service seeking protection for a type of daisy under the Endangered Species Act. The rare Stansell's daisy only survives at two sites in Oregon, in the Rogue River Siskiyou National Forest in Curry County. The daisy has extremely limited range. Its habitat is threatened by mining, climate change, and other factors. The Forest Service currently classifies Stansell's daisy as a sensitive species, but the Center for Biological Diversity is seeking further protections. The federal shutdown has hit one community in Washington state harder than most. Even as a final vote to reopen approaches in Congress, federal workers in Kitsap County say their faith in government work is wavering. KUOW politics reporter Scott Greenstone has the story.
The last 6 weeks have been really slow at the Town Portal Arcade Bar in Bremerton. The bartender, Salim Patterson, hasn't had a single customer all Monday afternoon. The pinball machines sit empty.
Across the board, everybody's feeling it. Because this is a Navy town, and of course it's going to be the first places to get hit, right? Like, if you can't afford to go out and play, you're not going to go out and play.
Across the street stands the Puget Sound Naval Shipyard. Bars and coffee shops here depend on the shipyard. So does the whole region. One out of every three workers in Kitsap County is employed by the federal government, here or at the nearby Navy base. Most are civilians who haven't gotten paid in more than 40 days. Workers are streaming out of the shipyard, where the Navy's ships are built and maintained, but most workers head straight home, ignoring TV and radio reporters on the street.
Zach, do you want to talk?
I can.
Yeah, no, I can.
At a Mexican restaurant behind us, a TV screen announces to a handful of diners that the Senate has voted through a deal to end the shutdown. A House vote is next. But even if the paychecks start coming again this week, the stability of a government job has been thrown into question. KUOW interviewed 5 federal workers who spoke on condition of anonymity. A technician who works with radioactive materials said we could call him Jay. He's not supposed to talk to the media and could get in trouble.
There's really no job in the world where they cannot pay you and still force you to show up and guilt you into it.
That's a KUOW staffer reading his quote. We're not using his voice to protect his identity. Workers talked about long weeks, 50 to 60 hours, with no pay, forced overtime, and work trips with no per diem for food. A repair worker we're calling T has been there more than a decade. Here's what he said, read by another KUOW producer.
You go to the payroll office and it's just basically an IOU. You'll get your money back, eventually, maybe, but an IOU doesn't pay my mortgage.
T and other workers said shipyard management has discouraged people from taking leave for personal or medical reasons, imposing extra approvals from higher ups. A spokesperson for Naval Sea Systems Command wrote in an email that they understand the stress the lapse in pay poses for the workforce and, quote, supervisors are encouraged to offer flexibility to address personal matters as best as possible while continuing to carry out essential work. But morale is low. One graveyard shift worker at nearby Naval Base Kitsap said imminent relief doesn't quell her fears about the future.
Nobody in their right minds would work for a company that behaves like this. The only remaining benefit of being a Fed now is knowing that I'm still doing my best to serve the people of the U.S.
That's another KUOW staffer's voice. While some businesses are quiet, pawn shops are busy. Guys are coming in hawking guns or guitars. The food banks are busier than ever. At Bremerton Food Line, inside an old Coca-Cola factory, there's been a frenzy of deliveries at the back door. Apples, pears, toasted oats. Families coming in the front door meet volunteer Cheryl Gross at the window. Normally she's chipper, but late on Monday, after things quieted down, talking about it was too much.
It's so sad.
A career federal analyst herself, Gross retired right before the shutdown hit.
The number of people coming in uniform, make me cry. And so many of them saying things like, I can't believe I'm here.
Even when the shutdown ends, the food bank will keep its expanded hours through the holidays at least. Unlike the federal workers, the bartenders and baristas, or anyone who had tips or hours cut because of the lull in business, doesn't get back pay. I'm Scott Greenstone in Bremerton.
You're listening to KMUN News. If you have a news tip or story idea, get in touch. Email us at news1@kmun.org. That's news, the numeral 1, at kmun.org.
That's all for us this week. We'll see you on Monday.